Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Dupataya evate navayorantam manta tattaya. Tamapya antaranan antaranda nitya natsu savanana. Kaivaravajam si vanti vyasa sahayat shrutayas.
Kaivaravajam si vanti vyasa
sahayat shrutayas. Tvaihi phalanti atan nirasanena bhavan nidhana. Here's the translation of the final verse of the prayers of the personified Vedas. Because you are unlimited, who are they speaking to?
Lord Vishnu.
Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can reach the end of your glories. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, become successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Please repeat. Because you are unlimited.
Because you are unlimited.
Neither the lords of heaven.
Neither the lords of heaven.
Nor even you yourself.
Nor even
can ever reach the end of your glories.
The countless universes,
which envelop, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, the particles of dust blowing about in the sky.
The Shrutis,
following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme,
become successful
by revealing you
as their final conclusion.
Now, without looking, what do you remember from there? Without looking, what do you remember from the verse?
Probably the Lord himself cannot understand his own glories.
Quite striking, isn't that point? One, it makes one think. Did that stand out for you?
Yes.
What do you think about that? That Krishna himself, or the Lord himself, even Vishnu, cannot understand, can't understand his glories, but cannot understand the extent or the limit of his glories. So what do you think about that? What question does that bring to your mind?
Infinite.
Excuse me?
The creation is infinite.
Yes, but what question does it bring to your mind?
How can he be God if he doesn't know his own?
Yeah, because, and this will be answered in the purport, specifically by a comment by Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakur, because when we perceive the Lord and we define the unlimited Supreme Lord, we define him naturally as knowing everything. So therefore, if there's something that he doesn't know, one may wonder if that's a limitation on him and it disallows him from being all-knowing. So that will be answered in the purport. Thank you. What do you think? Does that mean that he's not all-knowing if he doesn't know? The limitation of his glories?
Yeah,
means.
Wait, 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 you read the purport. You have the book right in front of you. But anyway, I didn't even ask you because we're going to read it. What do you think? Does that mean that he's there's something he doesn't know? I mean, one would think that way, right?
Yeah.
And does that disallow him or does that limit him? Is that a limitation? That's something he doesn't know? So that question, it's an interesting question, a logical and philosophical question that we shall answer soon. We'll have Uddhava Prabhu. you can say it first after. Okay, does anyone remember anything else from the verse?
Shrutis come to the right conclusion.
The Shrutis. Shrutis, that means the Vedic processes which are given to us by the hearing process. They come to the right conclusion. They reveal, the Shrutis, in other words, the Upanishads and the Vedas, they reveal you as their final conclusion of knowledge. You, not something impersonal, not something ordinary, but something or someone personal and extraordinary, but personal. They reveal, this is the purpose of the Shrutis, the Vedas. They reveal the Supreme Person, Bhagavan. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajgana adhyam. This great, all-pervading, unlimited knowledge, non-dual knowledge, nothing is dual in relationship to it, nothing is external to it. Ultimately, the highest point of that knowledge is he's a person. This is extraordinary. As we were speaking of yesterday, it's extraordinary. And the example that's given is quite interesting. The universes, the countless universes, we perceive to some extent this universe. And it is beyond our comprehension. It is huge. It is vast. Beyond our ability to understand, there is infinite, practically speaking, unlimited variety within this universe. And we look up at the night sky and we see countless, countless, uncountable stars going back millions and billions of miles. And we cannot understand the extent of this universe, but there are countless universes, just like there are countless stars in the sky, there are countless universes, and they are being blown around within the Supreme Lord's energy, like what?
Particles
of dust. When you think of a particle of dust being blown around, what do you think of? What is that? What image is that bringing to our consciousness? What thought do we have? Huh?
Nothingness.
Yeah, or you get nothingness or insignificance of the dust, something like that. We don't think of like dust being blown around in the air as extremely substantial in any way. What's dominant? Right now there's so much dust in the air. And what's dominant, the air or the dust? The air. We don't even see the dust. It's insignificant. So within the Supreme Lord, the dust, which is compared to what?
Universes.
So many unlimited universes is insignificant compared to him. And yet, he's a person. So how? If we can't understand the universe, if we can't understand one petal, or how many petals? Seven.
One, two, three, four, five.
Six, seven. I was bluffing, but don't worry about it. Seven petals. If we can't even understand actually the nature of one petal, We could break it apart and get down to the cellular level, and then we could break it apart even further and go down into that with the molecular level and break it even further into the atomic level and break it even further into the subatomic level and break it even further. And this is what the scientists do. They want, in a very demonic way, they want to understand the essential element of reality, the quarks and the gluons or whatever is in there, the extreme and the subatomic particles, and they make these huge, it's so fascinating, the demonic methodology, and it is demonic, and it's gross, like anything. Do we have any atomic, subatomic particle scientists here? And they have these cyclotrons, and they take the smallest particle they can find, and they spin it through magnetic force as fast as they possibly can, and then they bring another particle in there after it's spinning fast, and whack that subatomic and break it apart. And then they try to find subatomic particles, and then want to take that and take one of those and spin them and boom, break it apart. And as I always, when I think of this, I think of, now what happens if they found the super soul in there? What would they do? They'd probably want to take the super soul, put him there, and break him apart. That's why I said it's demonic. Because we want to find out. We don't care. We're going to discover everything by our power. But actually, when we're dealing with something that's unlimited in its meta model, and also the macro and micro, it's ununderstandable on the macro level, on the great level, on the micro level, on the smallest level. Again, one, other than the fact this is prasadam, we could say insignificant flower petal, or even how do they get the flowers to be these wonderful colors? Do they grow on plants these wonderful colors? Anyone know the secret? Huh? Nothing so even as wonderful as that. Usually they put the stems in dye. It just absorbs it due to the natural capillaric action of going upward using Krishna's natural forces. And if one can't even understand the dye, what to speak of the petal, what to speak of the methodology, the force that produces this on the smallest level, then what to speak of understanding this unlimitedly powerful Lord, who the universes, not one universe, but unlimited universes, are being pushed around. Now there's another concept in there too. Not only the unlimited universes with their shells, which are each shell of the seven shells, kosha, is 10 times larger than the one that's more close to the center of the universe. And what did the verse say about those universes? They're in the air of Krishna's transcendental existence. And what are they being, what is happening to them? They're being pushed around, just like the particles of dust are pushed by the air. The universes are being pushed by time, which is another potency of Krishna. So enter the element of time into this equation too. Another potency of Krishna. So not only does Krishna have these material universes, unlimited material universes existing within him, but they're also, so they're talking about three different energies here. There's the material energy, the universes, which includes all the different parts of the material energy. And then there's what they're existing within, which is also him and his energy. And then there's also the force of time pushing them all around. Like the air pushes the particles of dust. Does it take do you ever hear the air complaining? This is such hard work. There's so many particles of dust. I'm tired. I never get a day off or anything like that. No. completely insignificant. So that's compared to what? Time. And what is the ultimate function of time in relationship with these material universes? Krishna explains it in the Bhagavad Gita. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. I'm going to destroy everything in the form of time. So the thing that's destroying is more powerful. It has power over that which is destroyed. It forces destruction upon these dust-like universes. So how powerful is the force of time in this? And then, if what's the container of this? There's the universes, which is like the air, which is like the dust. And then there's the force of time, which is pushing it around. All the dust-like particles of the universe. And then, if the force of time is destroying the dust, but it doesn't destroy the container that the dust is in, which in this metaphor is the Lord. So he is not naturally, he is not under the control of his energy, which is this kala shakti, the time factor. The time factor destroys all of matter, including us tiny, excuse the word, insignificant persons on the physical level. Us. And it destroyed, shattered, scattered by the force of time. But Krishna is something, he's the container describing here, this unlimitedly large container that this is all going within and is not destroyed by time. And yet, and what else? Moving to the point of the conclusion of the prayers, how powerful and wonderful this is, that I'll read this part again. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, which is going to be discussed here, and this, I mentioned it yesterday, there are two methods of definition. One is in the positive, which is called Anvayor, and then there's definition through negation, which is called Vyatirek. An example. To define this positively, what would we say about it? Excuse me? Okay, that's true, it's existing. What else could we say about it? It is a flower petal. It is a yellow flower petal. It is yellow, it is a carnation. Two flower petals for that matter. Now how would we define the same thing through negation?
It's
not the table, it's not black. It's not a Porsche sports car, for that matter. It's not a papadam. Yes, that's just what I was thinking too. It is, in case any of you are looking at it with longing eyes, it is approaching prasadam time. I want to tell you, it is not a papadam. So you can define something in negative too. This is not a black. This is not green. This is not yellow. But it's a very long process when you cast away what something isn't, but yet it is a process of defining. And Mahaprabhu says this, Naham vipro na chanara patir na pivaishana sudro naham vani na chagriya patir no vinishya tirva. I am not this, I am not that, I am not that. Who am I? Gopi Bharata Parak, that's the positive. So the two work very well together in definition. So the Shrutis, the Upanishads, working on the Gyan platform mostly, which is the neti-neti process of meditation. And through meditation, understanding what is not the consciousness. The consciousness through negation is not the hand. I am not my hand. I'm not my fingernail. I'm not the wrinkles over here. I'm not this. I'm not this. I'm not that. So similarly, through the defining in a negative way, eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, trying to understand the Supreme by defining it what it is not, they eventually understand their final conclusion is that this is you, O Lord. You are the unlimited, all-powerful Lord. Now, and it is you that talking to Lord Vishnu, just like earlier in the Bhagavatam, Aham eva gram eva ye eva gre nanya yat sarasat param. What's the rest? Paschara ham yare tatsya yo vishasheta sosmaham. Three times, aham, aham. He's defining himself, I, and they're pointing and saying, this absolute truth is you, O Lord Vishnu. So amazingly enough, this unlimited Lord, because we're talking about him being unlimited because all the universes are floating around at him like insignificant dust particles. And therefore the beginning of the verse, that it's you, a person, the absolute truth is a person. And if we think of the glories of the Lord as limited to the fact that all the universes are floating within him and being pushed around by his kala shakti, his energy of time, and their insignificantness, if we think this is the limit of who he is, then we're also mistaken. He's much more than that. He's unlimitedly more than that. And therefore, the beginning of this verse, because you are unlimited, what does unlimited mean? It means you have no limit. That's a negative definition, vyatirek definition of what he is. What would be, you have no limit in your glories, and what would be an example of a positive definition of who he is? A negative definition, there is no limit to your glories. Positive, you are so glorious, you're the most beautiful, you have universes exist within you, unlimited, that your kala shakti is just one of your energy of time is one of your energies, the living entities, the jiva, chetra gya kya tara tata para is also one of your energies, the super soul is an expansion of you. And ultimately, brahmeti, the oneness of everything is you, Paramatmeti, the super soul within everyone's heart, which is Kiradakshay Vishnu, who is an expansion of Gavadakshay Vishnu, who is an expansion of Mahavishnu, Karnadakshay Vishnu. These are the Paramatmas, the Paramatma of the entirety of material creation, the soul, the super soul, that which gives life to the entirety of the material creation is known, that entity is known as Mahavishnu, Karanadakshay Vishnu, a person who does everything, the whole material creation. He doesn't exert himself at all. He's just breathing and it all comes into being. And when he takes an inward breath, an intake, it all ceases to exist, practically speaking. He's that powerful, an expansion of him. So he's the super soul of the material creation. And then there's the super soul of the universe, who is known as Gavadakshay Vishnu, gives life to the universe. And then there's the super soul who gives life to everything in the universe, who is all pervading everywhere. He's in everyone's heart. And between every atom, oh, Adam's not here. But we only had one everywhere anyway, so it would be hard to. And within every atom, even though we may not see every atom or any atom, he's still within. That's Kiran Dasavis, the super soul of everything in existence. that which gives life and gives its existence, even the soul, even ourselves, are dependent on Him for our existence, and yet He's a person. Now how are we going to know this person? And the question is, how? Of course, how are we going to know Him? But we have a relationship with Him, because everything in existence has a relationship with Him. Nothing is external to Him. But how are we going to live in that relationship instead of being bahyamukh, turned away? And how are we going to know more about Him? So let us read the purport here. Now in their last prayer, the personified Vedas draw the conclusion that all Shrutis is the Vedic literature, by their various literal and metaphorical references, directly, indirectly statements, ultimately describe the supreme personality of Godhead's identity, personal qualities, and power. The Upanishads glorify Him without end. Yad urdhvam gagi divo yad avak prithivyayad antara dvaya prithivi ime yad bhutam bhajatscha bhavishyatscha. My dear, this is the translation, my dear daughter of Gargi, His greatness encompasses everything above us in heaven, everything below the surface of the earth, and everything between heaven and earth, and everything that has ever existed, exists now, or will ever exist in all phases of time. There's nothing external to Him. This is the absolute truth. There's nothing external to Him. Nothing can be in existence or non-existence that is separate from Him. This is who we're dealing with, and He's a person. To illuminate the meaning of this final prayer by the Shrutis, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur presents the following conversation between Lord Narayan and the personified Vedas. The Vedas say, Lord Brahma and the other rulers of the heavenly planets have not yet reached the end of your glories. What can we do then, since we are insignificant in comparison to these demigods, to these great demigods? Lord Narayan replied, No, you Shrutis are gifted with more sublime vision than the demigods who rule this universe. Now what gives us our, what do we mean when we say vision? In a simple way, what does vision mean? Aditya? What do you think? What does vision mean?
And a view.
Excuse me?
The view.
View, yes. What you see is your vision. On the gross level, what you see with your eyes is your vision. But what is it that gives us our vision?
Light.
The mind, it's through the mind and intelligence. It's subtle, because one person, raise your hand if you don't know how to use a computer at all. Probably no one will raise their hand in this day and age, right? No one will raise their hand. But when a little child who has one conception of what a computer is, he sees a computer, and what will a child do? What a little child. Well, they'll walk over to it, they'll bang on it a bit, they'll try to put it in their mouth, they'll try to eat the mouse, even though they're vegetarian, maybe even. So they see the computer in one way, and perhaps if you're used to using programs, specific programs, you'll see it in another way, and a software engineer will see it in another way, and a hardware engineer will see the same thing in a different way. A botanist will see this flower in a different way than then the pujari will see it. The pujari sees a flower and thinks, oh, how nice to offer it to Krishna. The botanist maybe will see cells and rhizomes or whatever they see. Different. According to what? Our vision is determined not by our eyes, although our eyes do have something to do with it, but what is our vision determined by? Our consciousness. So in this conversation, Lord Narayan replies, no, your Shruti is a gifted with more sublime vision, which means more sublime consciousness, which means more subtle consciousness. And by the way, that's why we primarily follow principles of no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, to make our consciousness more subtle, so our vision can be more subtle, our perception of what is real will be more subtle, our perception of what is important, what is valuable will be more subtle. And then we chant Krishna's names for the same reason. So first is to remove the gross blockages, and then to make our consciousness still more subtle, we chant Krishna's names. And what? So one would think that the subtlest consciousness, the finest consciousness, would reveal the finest reality. But it's true, but it's not true. It's true. But yet, the finest consciousness cannot go to the highest level. It takes something more than anything that we can do, and that is mercy. And this will be described. That's the last thing that's basically going to be described. And mercy comes from what? Comes from Krishna, comes from a person. Mercy comes by the free will of another entity. So then it leaves us in the position, what do we do to get mercy? Which is the ultimate conclusion of everything. What can I do so that the Supreme Merciful bestows His mercy upon me? This is a meditation for a devotee. One of the things I do is make my consciousness as subtle as possible, as fine as possible, free from any of the grossness, and then make it subtler and finer. That part I do. And then you still need something else on top of that. You need bhakti, love, devotion. And then when that love and devotion reaches the highest pitch, and this is all necessary, but it is not sufficient, then you need mercy. Then you'll attract mercy. Why will you attract mercy? Because when there is love, it attracts the heart. And this is what love means. This is what bhakti means. So Lord Narayan replied, no, you Shrutis are gifted with more sublime vision than the demigods who rule this universe. So they have more sublime vision than the demigods, but they don't have the most sublime vision. There is sublime vision and sublime vision and sublimer vision, and then there's the sublimest vision. And who has the sublimest vision? The residents of Vrindavan and ultimately Srimati Radharani. And they see Krishna in a way, because it's the consciousness that affects the vision, they see Krishna in a way that no one else can see him. What do you think about that? Mother Yasoda sees Krishna in a way that's different from the cowherd boys. and different from the gopis, but in a way that no one else can see him. She sees Krishna and she thinks, always she thinks, oh my poor boy, he's not eating enough. Mother Yasoda, he's so thin, oh. And when he's herding the cows, she's continuously sending messengers and servants with food for Krishna, because she's so immersed in motherly love for Krishna. That's how she sees. And she doesn't see anything else. When Akura comes from Mathura, he's a blessed, loving devotee of Krishna, who has incredible vision of Krishna. But he can't see Krishna in the same way that the Brijbasis see Krishna. Uddhav, did you have this such incredible conversations in the Bhagavatam when Uddhava comes to Vrindavan? Incredible conversations. And his vision is different from Akura's vision, subtler and filled with more bhakti. Akura doesn't, he takes Krishna away. And Uddhava, he doesn't quite, there's no mention of him perceiving what's actually going on in Braja. But when Akura sees what's going on in Braja, first thing is Krishna, when he first comes into Vrindavan, Krishna allows him to see Vrindavan in its uppercut manifestation. When Krishna is there, and everything is blooming and blossoming and beautiful, the atmosphere is full with the greatest happiness. And then Krishna withdraws the Yogamaya, the internal energy, withdraws this vision, the uppercut, and lets him see Vrindavan in separation from Krishna, and everything's dried up. No one is alive, practically speaking. These are simultaneously manifesting. And Uddhava, after seeing the love of the resonance of Vrindavan for Krishna, he's amazed, because he's the best of the Yadus. And he sees the sublimity. Why is he the best of the Yadus? Because he's always associating with Krishna, such a confidant, so confidential friend. Krishna even asks advice from Uddhava. And the other Yadavas think he's so fortunate, Krishna, he never leaves Krishna's side. But then when he gets to Vrindavan and sees the Brijbasis, he sees their consciousness, the sublimity of their consciousness is the greatest. And he prays to take birth, even as he wants to take the dust of their feet, but they won't of course allow him to do that. So he wants to take birth outside of Vrindavan, even so that when the people leave Vrindavan, the Brijbasis, when they walk outside of Vrindavan, they touch Gomalata, just a vine outside of Vrindavan, so that the residents of Vrindavan, when they walk outside, especially the Braja Gopis, they'll be able to get the dust from their feet. That means their blessings. So he recognizes their consciousness. It takes an incredibly sublime consciousness to even recognize more sublime consciousness. You Shrutis know that are gifted with more sublime vision than the demigods who rule this universe. Again, we see according, not with our eyes, but our consciousness. Now, you will be able to reach the end of my glories if you do not stop now. So therefore, they say in the verse, but you yourself cannot even see the limit of your glories. You don't know your own limit. And but if that's the case, what do you mean when you call me omniscient, all-knowing and omnipotent, know everything, which was the question we asked before. And now, Uddhavapu, is your time.
What I was going to say was,
yes,
Krishna knows everything, and then something more comes, and then he learns that, and then something more comes, and he learns that. So he's constantly growing, more glories are coming, and he finds a man, and then another one comes, and he learns that, and yeah. So on and so forth.
Where is that given, that description given? Do you know?
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
In the class. Yeah.
It's in Caitanya Charitamrita. There's an endless competition between, one could say, the glories of Krishna and Krishna, and Krishna's knowledge of his glories, of his own glories. An endless competition. So who wins an endless competition? Huh? All those who think Krishna wins, raise your hand. All those who think the glories win, raise your hand. All those who are not yet decided, raise your hand. All those who think that there's no winner because it's an endless competition. That's right. So I tricked you. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry. Now that answer to that, what do you mean when you call me omniscient and omnipotent? Because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, this answer is certainly correct that Uddhava Prabhu was given, but there's also another answer he gives. He answers the same question in another way, and that we shall tell you tomorrow. Now, even though I don't want you to lose sleep about this, but still we will tell you tomorrow. I don't want you to lose sleep about it, and don't lose your appetites wondering, how is Krishna? Does he know everything? Does he not know everything? Endless competition. Is he really omniscient? How would you define omniscient if he doesn't know his own glories? And you're thinking about it and scratching out all your hair until there's no more hair and it sort of looks like this. Like me and Pete. But think about it nevertheless, and or you could, even if you want to find out the answer, you can just look at the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that's included over here. But tomorrow is when we will discuss this. And if you can't come tomorrow somehow or another and you want to hear it, you can send Uddhav an email. Okay? Thank you. Any questions or comments? But yes, you can ask a question? Oh, no. But the point that we're coming to is that Krishna is so great and so wonderful. How is it we're going to approach him? What is the methodology of approaching him? Another point, don't be confused that his pastimes and activities are human-like, are Naralila. That's what Brahma concludes. I've seen something, we spoke about this yesterday, that makes me understand that what I'm seeing, my vision, my consciousness, is not exalted enough to even approach an estimation of how great you are. And the conclusion is that we're going to need ultimate conclusion, we're going to need bhakti, which is our part, purified consciousness with love, loving purified consciousness, but we're also going to need mercy, which is his part, from above, descending mercy. Yes.
Can we understand this sentence, Maharaj, and this, the countless universes coming from the Lord's body? Because the universes are continuously growing. Initially they were in a small form, in the form of prana, so it is coming from the Lord's body. So we don't have to visualize that big universes are coming out of the body. Can we understand it also like that?
You mean big universes or little universes?
I'm saying, yeah, what is coming out of the body are...
They're in seed forms, seed that's form. Described.
So that is what is coming out. So they are within this body.
But, yes, but that's not what's being talked about exactly. Nokia. It's talking about within him, because when they're outside, they're also within him. When they are inside his body, they're within him, but there's no time moving them around. But when they're outside his body, when time is moved, when they are manifest, they are also within him. Think about that. When they're inside him, they are within him. And they are without, when they're outside, they are within him. That means there is something outside of him that is within him. Think about that. There's something outside of him that is within him. What do you think about that?
Yeah, in the sense, the universe is continuously coming out of his body. So the pradhan is coming continuously out of the pores of his skin. And there are universes outside, as you said, which are growing and bigger. And the seed form is within his body and coming out of his body, which is pradhan, which is coming out of his body. And the time energy is also within him, because it is through his eyes the time energy comes and sees the pradhan. So the time.
But the universes aren't being affected by time while they're in him, because they're unmanifest. So I'm not sure what you want to say. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I thought we can look at it in two ways. As you said, the universes are within him in the form of small seed forms, and the universes are also outside him when these pradhans grow after the Kalashakti takes it and it becomes...
It's not that the universe is a pradhan.
No, the universe, the pradhan becomes universe through Mahatattva and the universes.
That's also quite inconceivable. But your comment also, you're asking if this is it appropriate for us to see the universes within him?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I said yes. But I also said that the time factor doesn't affect the universes within him as in the same way it affects the universes when it's outside of him. But I also pointed out when they're outside of him, they're still within him. And think about that. Mm. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What? What do you think about that?
You can then visualize the whole universe as part of his body.
Think about this. Think about this. That they're outside of him, because it's coming from his skin holes. But while they're outside of him, according to this verse, they're also within him. Now think about that. What do you think about it?
Infantile.
Yes, good point. Thank you.
There's one more question.
Yes, but he also has one more question. You only get one right at a time.
My understanding, Krishna, there's no beginning or end.
Yes. Yes, he has no beginning or an end, but yet... He has a form. Think about that. Forms have beginnings and ends. In other words, like I'm sitting here and I have a form. And my form only expands to a certain point and then it stops. And one would think, and not only my form, but the form of this flower petal has a border to it. So we think naturally that all forms have borders to them, which means a place, the border is the place that differentiates the end of them and the beginning of something else. But Krishna has a form that has no beginning or end. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about it? Yeah. Wow. It's really great. Yeah, but that's pretty good, yeah? He's all powerful. He can do whatever he likes. He can have a form that has no beginning and end. This is called the Chintya Shakti. It's inconceivable. So that's how we start our relationship with Krishna. that you have inconceivable power and I am tiny and insignificant. Therefore, for my own welfare, I should place myself as subordinate to you. I can never understand you other than by your mercy. I can do my part to understand, but ultimately I have to submit to you because you are inconceivably powerful and I am quite insignificant, although I don't like to think of myself in that way. Now your second question.
The last sentence, Maharaj, about the truth is taking the negative way or the eliminating way, I feel was consistent because how can you use material words and or sounds to describe which is beyond matter, which is transcendence?
That was the point right in the beginning of this chapter. Mm. Right. But that disallows descending sound vibration. If you're limited to Vyatirek, I mean, it's one thing. Just like I'm naham vipro na chanada patir na piva, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a this, I'm not a that, not a sannyasi, I'm not this, I'm not that, and that. So that definition is very frustrating, in fact. But that's all you can get through your own power and through your own intelligence. So therefore, the two of the positive goes very well with it, and that's the part that's satisfying. So because they're limited in that sense, using an ascending method, this is more a jnana type of method. Any other question or comment?
You mentioned how Akura took Krishna away from Vrindavan. He separated Krishna from the devotees.
On one level, yes.
And then you have Uddhava come and apparently he saw two prakat and aprakat. And he also, when the devotees were in separation from Krishna, he was able to bring Krishna's presence.
Yes.
Let's explain how.
Yes. Because hearing Krishna Katha, he gave them Krishna Katha. And depending upon the receptivity of one's consciousness, the sublimity of one's consciousness, one can actually perceive Krishna just as directly as him. When one hears Krishna Katha, if one's consciousness is right and the person, the source is proper, one can actually perceive Krishna fully. One time, also it's described how, I think it was the Srimati Radharani, I think this is from Madhagda Madhava. She was feeling so much separation from Krishna. And Vishakha Devi, who is a great, wonderful artist, she painted a picture of Krishna to satisfy Srimati Radharani. And she handed it to Srimati Radharani. And then the picture attacked her. Because the picture of Krishna, the katha of Krishna, I mean in a very loving, gentle way, or whatever he did. Because Krishna katha, Krishna's names, the picture of painting of Krishna, done properly, this is all Krishna. This is wonderful. The Bhagavatam, Puranako Dhanojita. But it takes consciousness, proper consciousness. Okay. Srima Bhagavatam ki jay, Srima Prabhupada ki jay. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue and we shall hear this wonderful answer.